Thank you very much. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. And I'm blessed to be able to say that. I don't take any credit for that. That comes from another deal. And I spoke last night. I've been told I'm not allowed to... I'm sort of like defanged tonight. I'm not allowed to call anybody. I'm not allowed to, you know, call the group a bunch of whores or prostitutes, hypocrites, and I can't make fun of anybody. I can't be sarcastic, and I'm supposed to not try not to be obnoxious. So I'm not quite sure what to talk about at this point. You know, but the truth is that. I got out all my venom and resentments at the KISS group, the Back on Track group last night. So I'm actually feeling pretty good. So I'm gonna try to be the nicer Russell. I've been praying to try to mellow out, you know, but it hasn't been working. I've been getting worse, you know. I've been getting into the Bleeding Deacon deal, you know, whatever that deal is. But it's good to be here, and I just want to share a few things. I have no idea what I'm going to talk about. It's the usual, you know, at these prices, what do you expect? Preparation, you know. So I was thinking, I figured I'd talk about my grandkids because I got nothing much. You know, listen, I'm old. I'm sick. I'm going to be 65 in March. I'm looking forward to Medicare. I'm so excited. This is like when I was 16 years old and I wanted to get like my permit, you know what I mean, my driving deal, you know, and I'm looking forward. I cannot wait. Of course, I'm sort of convinced that by the time I get there, they're gonna take it away, you know, it's gonna be taken away. But exciting Medicare. But and then one more year if I make it, Social Security, unbelievable. Life is good, you know, and so that's the deal. So I figured I have four kids. I've been married. I'll be sober if I make in January 33 years, and I've been married like 32 years. You know, my sponsor said not to make any major moves during my first year, but I didn't think getting married would be a major thing, and I was mistaken on that. You know, actually, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. It was, you know, sometimes I think back, you know, every once in a while during the last 32 years. Like usually at times when I want to kill my wife and I'm thinking of stabbing her 50 times, you know, I think maybe I should have waited until I had about 5 years. I probably, you know, but I would have probably screwed it up. It was probably a good thing. I wouldn't have survived in AA as a single guy. That was another problem I had where, I mean, it's really the best thing that happened to me is I learned how to live with like one woman. You know what I mean? That's one woman, and I started off with a bunch of kids. She had a kid, and I had a kid, and there was another kid between us, and now there's four or five kids. There's kids all over the place. They just show up at the table. I feed them. What am I going to do, you know? They say they belong to me. I say, what the hell? Sit down. Grab a chair. You know, so I raised four kids, and I have six grandkids now, and my youngest daughter is finally moving. She's threading. She's finally gotten engaged. She's moving out, 27 years old. She asked me the other day, she said, can I have $40? I said, I just gave you $100 the day before yesterday. She said, well, you know, if you can't support me, if you're not going to give me money, you shouldn't have had me. I said, we didn't know we were going to have you. You know, I mean, if I'd known, I would have, but that's the deal. But she's actually going to move out, so we're going to be like empty nesters, and we're just having such a good time at our house, you know, and I'm looking forward to that deal, And so in any event, I came out of my room, but did I mention I was an alcoholic? Did I say that? I am. I mean, why would like a normal person come up here and talk to a group like this unless there was something very strange about you? You know what I mean? But I am an alcoholic, and I used to actually drink alcohol. You'll have to take my word for that. And I used to drink alcohol against my will. You know, I used to do one of these deals where, you know what they say that we have recovered from that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body where you wake up in the morning and say, I'm not going to drink today, and then by 5 o'clock you're drunk again. Then the next morning you wake up and you say, I'm not going to buy booze today, and by 5 o'clock you're searching for dimes, nickels, and quarters so you can get up $2.89 and get a quart bottle of Carlos Rossi Chianti and sit by the record player. Back then we had LP records. What a drag, you know. I'd listen to this. I'd listen, you know, songs like Rainy Day and Mondays. You know, I'm Mr. Blue, Only the Lonely, you know, Running on Empty, you know, all the, you know, A Pirate Looks at 40, all the classics, you know what I mean? you know, rainy days and Mondays, all that stuff, you know. And when you're reading to, and when you're listening to LPs, what happens is I would get onto this song, let's say, like, you know, I'm Mr. Blue, okay? And I would get on I'm Mr. Blue, and then I put it on the thing, and then it would end. And then you have to be up enough so that you can lift up the needle and bring it back in to listen to it again. And I think about my life and what it all meant, and I think about my funeral, and, you know, and they'd be burying me, and I think about all those wonderful women who were gathered around the casket crying, you know, because of the way they had treated me so shabbily, you know, and served you right. Now you're sorry, you know what I mean? Of course, I wasn't dead. I was hiding behind the tree or something, because if you're an alcoholic, you can have vivid imagination. I was also a self-pity-aholic. Well, you know, if you're an alcoholic, you're automatically a self-pity-aholic. You're a please-love-me-aholic, please-don't-reject-me-aholic, you know. You got all them holic things going on. Even when you're sober, that happens. But I digress. I actually get ahead of myself. So in any event, I was, but I don't do that anymore. I don't do any of that stuff anymore. You know, it was good. Not only the drinking, the thumb-sucking crybaby, feel sorry for yourself. You know, I mean, I asked my sponsor once, you know, do you still get, my sponsor Joe Stein, I said, I had about 5 or 6 years. I said, do you still get resentments? He says, get them, I give them. I said, wow. I mean, I looked at him. Wow, how does he do it? I couldn't stand it. If somebody came up to me and said, you know what so-and-so said about you? I said, wow, I could not stand it. If I thought somebody didn't like me or was mad at me, I couldn't sleep at night. You know what I mean? I was speaking once to, it takes a long time for that stuff. It takes a long time for, you know, I know, you know, this thing I say all the time, but it's true. You know, alcoholics, you know, we tell ourselves rational. I'm a rationalizer. We tell ourselves rational lies. We tell ourselves stuff that's absolutely full of shit, but we believe it. If you say it enough time, you believe it. Like you say things like, well, I don't give a crap what they think about me. You know, and your whole life is, I don't give a crap what they think about me. I'm my own man. I don't give a crap. You know, you say things like, you don't know who you're screwing with. Sort of like you're like a lone ranger, you know. Do you know who you're talking about? Who do you think you're talking about? Who do you think you are? Who are you? You don't know. I don't give a crap what you think. I don't give a crap what they think. And you know what happens is you're like 25 years sober before you realize that people that say or even think I don't give a crap what they think about me, all they do is think all the time about what other people think about them. Because people that really don't give a crap what other people think about them don't say I don't give a crap what they think about me. They say things. They say past assault or something, but they don't say that stuff. You know. But what happens if you tell yourself 1,000 times you don't give a shit what other people think about you, you think you're a guy that doesn't give a crap what other people think about you when your entire day, morning, noon, and night, is thinking, what do they think about me? You know, when is this going to happen? You know, that's how alcoholics make decisions. You know, regular people make decisions. They say, well, is this a good thing for me? Could this be a good thing? Could this be a good thing for my family? Is this a profitable thing to do? Somewhere all the way down the list is maybe, you know, what will other people think? You know what I mean? Alcoholics, this is the way alcoholics make the decision. Well, what will people think about me? They'll laugh at me. Forget it. I'm not doing it. That's it. That's how we do it. You know, that's how we make decisions. It's all about how do we look and everything. That has a lot. I'm not going to get into this. That has a lot to do with this problem we have in AA now, which we never had for the first 4 years about the God thing. You know, people are so worried that, you know, God forbid they should say Jesus or the Bible or something. Somebody will laugh at them or yell at them or something, and they'll have to crawl into a cave somewhere or something like that. But that has to do with the low self-esteem crap that all alcoholics walk in with, you know. You know, I heard one guy say once, and I've adopted because it was so true. You know, one of the old ideas we have is that we're different. You know, I mean, you know, like, how, you know, I'm like unique. You know, nobody. How could you talk to you? You just don't understand. When I used to talk to people, they'd be talking to me every 5 seconds. I'd say, "You understand what I'm talking about?" I was so sure that nobody could understand or did understand because my thoughts, my situation was so different. Nobody could ever possibly understand. I couldn't talk to anybody about it. And, you know, that's an old idea that you're absolutely convinced of. And when you're absolutely convinced that nobody can understand, you are like alone. You're out there past Mars somewhere, you know. And of course, after being here for many years, I now realize that we're all like twins. We're all exactly the same. I mean, you know, some of us are fat and skinny and this and that. But essentially, we're, you know, I mean, I know we think that, you know, you say, oh, if they only knew the thoughts I had, eating dead babies and stuff like that, you know, they'd lock me up. And I say, yeah, they're all thinking that shit. You know what I mean? It's a whole, you know, that's why AA works. Because, you know, we stand up here and some guy, that's the only thing you need to be, only thing you need for a good AA meeting is, you know, is sincerely be transparent. If you just be sincere. you know, if you learn how to fake that, you got it made. But just be sincere and be transparent. And people come up and say, man, you were talking to me. You were looking at me. I know you were talking. You were like reading my mind. You know, I said, no, I was just talking about myself, and we're all twins. And that's how it works. You know, you hear this stuff in here and you say, this is my home, this is my place. Because you would never go up on the street to anybody up there and tell them what you hear in there, because they'd watch, they put a net over you, or at least you think they would, you know. And because we're all basically the same. You know, if I thought something, this is a scary. If I, you know, all those crazy thoughts you have, those crazy, crazy thoughts, they're all thinking them. You know, we're not all, listen, they're all scared. They're all petrified. We're just not all scared at the same time at the same meeting. That would be a real bad deal. But, you know, we're all, whatever the thing is going on, we all got that thing going on in the here. So, you know, that's a great deal. But in any event, so I got out of bed the other morning, and I had four of my grandkids. Two of my grandkids live up in, they're all gorgeous. They're all fantastic. Well, two of my grandkids live up in Bethesda, Maryland with my son and my daughter-in-law, but I got four kids that live real close to me, and I got four grandkids and a niece that are between the ages of 6 and 10. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, as you get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, this thing is so experiential. It has so much to do with experience, you know. You know, they say for us, the grouch and the brainstorm is not for us. You know, we want so much to understand. And the truth of the matter is, my problem centers in my mind. That's what the book says. It says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by the effect of alcohol. They're restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. You know, and he says that we drink because we like the effect. He says, but the alcohol drinking is but a symptom of disease. Our real disease centers our mind, not our body. You know, the real question is, why do we drink in the first place? Why do we need to drink? You know, I drank because the alcohol was the perfect solution to my problem of alcoholism. No woman, no car, no amount of money, no job, no new state, no wife, no nothing ever worked quite as well for me as just a few drinks, so I drank it. You know, I defy anybody to drink alcohol and have to do for them what it did for me and then stop. You just ain't going to do it. It was the perfect pill for me. It was the perfect solution for me. And you know, what happens is ultimately alcohol, but why did I drink? I drank because I had to drink because you ready for this? Because I hated sobriety. I hated, and you know what happens is your alcoholic life seems the only normal. Since I've been living the way I've been living, and this is the only brain I have, I don't know how to experience life any way different than the way I'm experiencing it, how I'm experiencing it. And to me, fear is normal. To me, anxiety is normal. To me, all the bad and negative feelings I have, bad thoughts about myself and other people, it's normal. Whatever's going on, listen, if you're sober now, and you're up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you got 15,000 thoughts going through your mind and you can't get to sleep, or you're thinking about the money problems, and you're thinking about these problems, and life is a difficult thing because there's so many moving parts and so much, and you got to control and you got to do it. I mean, all the stuff that you're experiencing, you know when you say, I need a meeting? Whatever that deal is, that's alcoholism. Every thought you have that makes you uncomfortable, makes you restless, irritable, that's alcoholism. That's where it really lives. I never used to experience alcoholism really until I stopped drinking. Because before, when I was sober, how would I experience alcoholism? I only experienced something called drunk. Drunk is not alcoholism. Drunk is a result of trying to treat alcoholism. It's what happens when we try to, it's the side effect of the medication for alcoholism. Drunk is the side effect. Because what would happen is, I'd be sitting somewhere, in a bar, in my house, whatever, just minding my own business, and all of a sudden alcoholism would like come upon me. It would be there. It would be 5 miles in the distance. You know, you sort of feel when it's coming. You know, something in your mind says something like this. I need a drink. You ever, I'm not the only one who ever thought that, right? I'm in a group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope that's not the only, I hope I'm not the only, maybe I am different, you know what I mean? You ever feel like you need a drink? You know what I mean? Like every second, you know? That was my problem. My problem was not drinking. My problem was I used to sober up. If I could have just kept that thing going, you know? But the bottom line, so what happens is, you know, you got that thing, it's coming upon you. Now you don't realize it's coming upon you. Because when you say, I need a drink, you know what's, I want to tell you, you ever heard of, actually, when I first came to AA, I thought everybody stopped drinking forever. It was, I can't remember, I remember the first time some guy with like 5 or 6 years, you know, picked up, slipped and picked up a chick. My mouth dropped. I didn't realize that people actually drank again after they picked up a white chick. I mean, I know it sounds crazy because it happens all the time, but the first time I saw it happen, I was like amazed. You know, I mean, people drink again, so, you know, but think about this. A guy would, you've probably, if you've been here for a while, you've probably seen people with 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, 15, 20 years drink. Have you ever seen that? Have you ever seen that happen? Somebody in the mean says, you know, I had 10 years and I drank it. You ever see that? Now you ready for this? Now you ready for this? The moment before that guy took his first drink, you know, the moment before that guy with 10 years took his first drink, you ready for this? He was sober. You understand that? He was sober. You know why he took the drink? Because of alcoholism. Because he needed a drink. Because of that deal. Which goes on even after you stop drinking. It doesn't stop. But what happened with me is that, but I don't realize it's alcoholism because you know what it feels like to me? It feels like the way I am. My alcoholic feeling seems the only normal one. You know what seems unnormal? You know what seems abnormal to me? Good sobriety. That's what seems weird to me. You know? I remember the first time I wasn't worried. I went up to my sponsor. First time I wasn't worried about something. I said to my sponsor, I said, I feel funny. He said, what do you mean? He says, I don't know. I don't know. I feel really strange. There's something, I don't know. There's something wrong, you know? He said, well, are you worried about something? He says, no. He says, you're scared about something? He says, no. He says, there's something wrong. He says, no. He says, I don't know. It's just, I just feel different. I feel strange. He says, don't worry. That's serenity. You'll get used to it. You know what I mean? I wasn't used to it, you know, because if you're an alcoholic, you're living fear. Fear permeates your life. You don't even know you're in fear. You don't even admit you're in fear. It's one of those things that alcohol do. They don't admit it. You know, I'm a practicing attorney. I have guys come in my office. I have alcoholics and non-alcoholics come in my office. Nobody comes to see me unless they have a serious problem because I charge money. And nobody needs to come, nobody wants to come to my office unless the thing is blown up. The indictments happened, they got served with papers, something happened. And 99.9% of the guys that come to my office, I have a little sign on my desk, Jack Nicholson from A Few Good Men's, it says, the truth, you can't handle the truth. And the most people that come to my office have been living a lie about themselves for years and years and years, like we do with the alcohol, and getting away with it. Somehow manipulating or getting away with it so they can sort of go this way or go that way, or you know, it's like we're like ants on a log going down a river. You know, every once in a while the log goes to a bend in the river, we think we're like steering the log, but the log's going where the log's going. You can sort of like position yourself on the log a millimeter here or there to get less wet, which is what we do, but every once in a while the log just like goes under or something goes wrong and we have to go see the attorney or the doctor, whatever, and he sits down, and most of the people that get arrested or something happened, it's because they've been doing something in their life over a long period of time. You know, a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, that is absolutely insane, but getting away with it, not telling anybody, and somehow in their mind saying it's okay, there's no problem here. And all of a sudden the thing's blown up and they come into my office and they got, and they all sound alcoholic because they all got the same story. The story sounds like this. It's not my fault. I'm not, that's what they say. They say it's not, they say you don't understand. They say I'm not to blame. It's his fault. It's their fault. And it makes perfect sense. They explained to me. And the more they explained to me, the more I realized that if they ever explain this to the judge or the jury, they're not going to the jail. They're going to put them under the jail. So the first thing I can do as an attorney or as any person with discernment is I've got to bring them from the planet. Because you see, on their planet, on planet Alki, it makes sense. You understand what I'm saying? Because the rules are different. You know, the entire universe revolves around them. And everybody's screwed up except for them. But on the planet Earth, it doesn't make any sense. So the first thing I got to do is I got to sort of get them back down to the planet Earth, you know, and sort of explain to them what's going on. And so, you know, that's the disease of the dis-ease of alcoholism, which we naturally, this is just the way we think. This is just the way I am, you know. And I'll have people come to my office and they'll tell me this story. They'll say, I'm sure you guys know if you did the four step, one of the problems that they talk about fear being the corrosive threat of our lives. You know, I know you don't think you're in fear. I know you don't believe you're in fear. You know, you think, you know, you're not really scared. I understand that, but it reaches a point where you either believe the book Alcoholics Anonymous or you believe your own brain. Listen, here's the problem. You come in here with an incredible, let's assume I'm correct about this. You know, I mean, this is after many, many years of fighting this deal. You know, my sponsor said when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money. and the man with the money will walk away with an experience. There's nothing like experience, you know, over, you know, what your opinion is. You know, I've been around here for almost 33 years, sponsored hundreds of bands. I've watched them go out. I've watched them come in. I've watched my own life. I sort of know what works and what doesn't work. I mean, I get it. I've run the experiment in the lab. I see how this isn't just a theory with me. I see what works and what doesn't work. And, you know, the bottom line is you have this, we have this deal. The guy will sit down with me. He'll look me in the eye and he'll say this. You know, I'm sort of worried about the money situation. I'm worried about my wife. I'm worried about, you know, what's going to happen with the mortgage. I'm sort of concerned about the job, the way they treat me. I think they may be firing me, and I'm worried about this, and I'm worried about that, and I'm worried about the other thing. And I say, okay, we can deal with that. So basically, you're in fear. And they'll look at me and they'll say, I didn't say that. I'm just worried. I just have a little anxiety. Because somehow in their mind, they figured out that, first of all, what they're worried about is they're worried that you might think that they're in fear. Because that would mean they're less than a man. And when you think you're a piece of crap, and you think you're a piece of shit, and you worry about whether you're a man or not, and you worry about whether other men think you're a man or not, the last thing you want to do is make yourself vulnerable and tell anybody that you're anything, you're weak at all. So the first thing the first time you get out of jail is you got to know you're in jail in the first place. You know, so the first thing that's happening is they got this whole wall coming up behind them where they don't even want to admit to themselves or anybody else what the real problem is. And if you can't even admit what the real problem, what shot you have is getting at it. So here's this guy, his whole life is riddled with fear. All he's doing, he's waking up in the morning thinking, this is a central fact group, right? Yeah. Well, you know what the central fact of the life of that, you know, it says great fact is this and nothing less, which I believe means it's nothing less than this. That the central fact of our lives are is that our Creator lives in our hearts and lives, which in a way which is indeed miraculous. That's the central fact. The central fact, when the central fact is your Creator in your life, that means when you wake up in the morning, you think about Him. That means as you're driving to work, you're thinking about Him. That means as you're going to school, you're thinking about Him. That means when you go to sleep at night, you're thinking about Him. That means your whole day is about thinking about Him. You know, that's what the central fact. You know, if you're thinking about money, you're thinking about the job, you're thinking about what you're going to do if he says this, what are you going to do if he says that, if you think about all that other crap that's going on out there, most of which you have no control over, I mean, 99% of the stuff that's going on out there, you have no control. I got guys come to me, and they say, I got a real problem. I say, tell me what the problem is. They'll tell me what the problem is. I'll say, well, what does this have to do with you? They'll say, what do you mean? I said, what does this have to do with you? What is your sister's divorce in Milwaukee to the crackhead? What does that have to do with you? He says, what do you mean? It's my sister. I said, yeah, but what does it have to do with you? I said, well, what do you mean? What does it have to do with you? Well, I like my sister. I said, but what does it have to do with your life? What do you mean? My life? Your life. What does it have to do with you? He says, well, it doesn't have anything to do with you. I said, well, there you go. How do you feel now? He says, I feel better. You know? You start realizing that 90% of the stuff you worry about has absolutely nothing to do with you. You just worry about it because you worry about it. You don't even know why you worry about it. You know, you're not only an alcoholic, you're a thinkaholic. You can't help but think about it. Somebody say to you, why do you think about it? The first thing you think is that they're crazy. So 90% of the crap you worry about, and you worry and fear is about part of alcoholism, is stuff that doesn't even concern you. And 90% of the 10% that's left is stuff you can't do anything about anyway. And 9 out of 10 of those things aren't going to happen. The one thing that's going to happen is going to happen differently than the way you think it's going to happen. So you're left with like 1%, which basically has to do with going to the bathroom, going to sleep, and eating. That's pretty much it. And you'd be surprised how incredible life can be when you don't have to think. But of course, if you're an alcoholic, you got to think all the time because all we do is we're in fear, and that's the real alcoholism. Selfishness, self-centeredness, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, 100 forms of fear. You know what it means to have 100 forms of fear? That means if you've got like 20 nailed down, there's 80 you don't even know about. I mean, don't even worry about the committee that's meeting in your head. You guys ever hear about the committee? They're talking about, oh, the committee. What are you worried about the committee? At least they're inviting you to the meetings. You know what I mean? Why don't you worry about the committee that's meeting in executive session that doesn't even invite you? You know what I mean? So the bottom line, you got this worry going on. It says, above everything, we must get rid of this selfishness. The self-centered fear is part of being selfish. It says above everything. You guys read the big book, right? It's big. It's a book. It's blue. Big, basic text. You know what it says in the big book? It says. See, that's the problem. The problem is when you read the big book, you be using your brain, right? Yeah, that's where it gets all screwed up, man. You see, you come in here and your brain is diseased, your brain is the problem, you got a bad brain. If I could only take the brain out and replace it with an orangutan brain, you'd be fine. But you got your brain, that's the only brain, it's a crazy brain, it's a nutty brain, and that would be the brain that you're using to read the book, right? That's where it all gets screwed up. So instead of following the book, you follow the, quote, wisdom of the rooms. You hear some banana say something, you say, well, I guess I'll go with that, or I'll go with this. Or, you know. You don't go with that thoroughly follow our past stuff. Thoroughly follow, there's a word in there, thoroughly follow our past stuff. So that's the problem. So, you know, and so it says above everything, we must get rid, above everything, we must get rid of this selfishness, or what? Kills us. K-I-L-L. Kills, doesn't even bruise it, like kill, goes right to the death penalty. We must get rid of the selfishness or it kills us. You know what it says? It says God makes that possible. Hey, this isn't me. Yeah, go ahead and report me in New York. There's some old timer here saying all sorts of crazy stuff like God makes us. Hey, that's right out of the book. God makes that possible. But, you know, if you talk too much about God in AA meeting, they don't like it. But of course they don't like it. You know what I mean? Because it goes counter to what they want to do. They don't want to submit themselves to authority. You know, they don't want to get on their knees. They don't want to do any of that stuff. They want to believe that they're in control, that they've got power over this thing, that they can beat this thing. They can't beat this thing. It's a losing game. You know, there ain't no beating this thing. All there is submission to God. That's all there is. That's why we end up on the 11th step and we submit to Him more and more and more. We have Him more and more. You know, listen, you don't have to buy into this thing. I know who sticks around for 30 years. You know, I know the difference between, you know, sobriety and emotion, just mere physical sobriety and emotional sobriety. You know, I know what that deal's all about. So in any event, I was coming out of my room the other morning, and I was coming out of my room, you know, and you're going to have to follow this. I'm sorry. I make some hard rights. But in any event, so I'm coming out of my room the other, and it just happened. So, and by the way, I want you to, you'll be my bookmark. So if I forget, you just follow me and follow along with this deal. So I'm coming out of my room the other morning, and I'm walking, and I come out of my bedroom, and I got four of my grandkids between the ages of 6 and 10. And one of my grandnieces, I was, she's like 7 years old. I walk out of my room to, I'm walking to the kitchen across the living room. And as I get up to walk across, it's like a Saturday morning, Sunday morning, I can't remember what the weekend. And all the chairs and the sofas in the living room have been rearranged into like a circle or some sort of weird sort of, octagonal thing, you know what I mean? And you can't even see them because they're all covered with blankets. You understand what I'm saying? It's hard to explain. It was like a Bedouin tent. You understand? And what they had did was my grandchildren, and we're talking, I think four girls and one boy, had built a fort in the middle of my living room. And they built it in such a way so that you couldn't get across the living room. You couldn't, because the fort was blocking, had blocked the house. You understand what I'm saying? So, I crawled along the side, and they were inside the fort. You know, they were inside the fort. You know, and screaming, yelling, he's here, you know, be quiet, you know. So I went around the fort, and I went in there, I made myself some coffee. And I started thinking about that. You know, it's sort of interesting. You know, yeah, because what happens with this deal, this AA deal or this whatever deal we're involved as far as thinking about our recovery, you start looking at things through eyes of, through spiritual eyes, I would suppose. You start spiritualizing sort of most things. You start sort of, you just don't only look at things as what's going on. You know, the truth is at least I see things now. The great thing is I can see that. You know, when I was drinking, I would have gone up and I'd say, what the? You know, I'd be just yelling and screaming. I wouldn't even see what's going on. At least I see it and I'm amused by it. Then I start thinking and I start even remembering that I used to build forts. I remember that I used to build forts with my buddies. And I would build, we would go down to Long Island Sound and we would build these, we would get into the dunes there. We would carve out these caves, these like little caves. And you could only fit like one or two people, but you couldn't see it. From the outside, you couldn't see us. We could go inside the cave. And then at night sometime, if we had sleepovers, we would like build forts in the bed. I mean, like the walls were like sheets. You know what I mean? I mean, these were impervious, the rockets, you know. Nobody could hurt us in the fort. We would go into the fort. And, you know, I remember being in the fort. I remember I'd be in the fort by myself or somebody else. Maybe we'd have a flashlight and we'd have the covers over us. And we'd be in the fort. We'd be in the deal, you know. And I start thinking, you know, they were doing exactly what I did when I was a kid. And so I started thinking, you know, why, I guess it's sort of like, anybody else build forts besides me? I'm the only one, you know. And I started thinking, why did I do that? Why did I do that thing, you know, where I started realizing, I said, the feeling I had when I was in the fort was I felt safe. I felt safe. It's the strangest thing. Here I am in bed, you know what I mean, in my house, and I put a sheet up, you know what I mean, and a couple guys would go under the sheet, you know, and I feel safe inside the fort. Outside the fort, not so safe. Inside the fort, safe. Inside the cave, safe. Outside the cave, not so safe. You know what I mean? And I don't know when I stopped, you know, when did I stop building the forts? 10, 12, 13. But there came a time when I just stopped building the forts. But I realize now that even when I stopped building the forts, I never had the same feeling of safety as I felt inside the forts. And so what really happened with me, these things are so, you know, it says the alcohol, it says in the book where it talks about we drink alcohol because the feeling is so elusive. The feeling of fear, the feeling of unsafeness is so elusive we don't even realize. What happened was I didn't stop building the forts because all of a sudden I felt safe. I stopped building the forts because I got used to feeling, unsafe. You understand what I'm saying? The feeling of feeling ill at ease and unsafe in the world, I got used to that. I got used to feeling scared. I got used to feeling on edge. I got used to being worried. What happened is being worried and having anxiety and being concerned about myself was something I got used to as being normal. As a matter of fact, if you were to come up to me and say, you know, they say the alcoholic life seems the only one. If you were to come up to me and say something stupid like, why do you worry about that? I'd say, what are you talking about? How are you not going to worry about it? You know what? I remember I'm driving up with my first sponsor, Bob Sullivan, to Bark. He sponsored me. I had about 4, 5, 6, 7 months, whatever it is. And he sponsored me and another guy named Bob. My sponsor's name was Bob. He sponsored a guy named Bobby. At the same time, he sponsored me. Now, I'm one of these guys that picked up a ride trip. I never drank. I did a lot of other things for him, but I never drank after that, you know. Bobby was one of these guys. He picked up a ride trip, and every 30 days, he would go back to drinking again. You know, it would be when he would say, I'm coming on that time again. You ever meet guys like that? They have like a timer. It's 30 days or 9 days. I always drink at 30 days. I always drink at 9. It's like a countdown, you know what I mean? And Bobby would be a great guy. He'd be well for like 30 days, and then, man, like clockwork, you know? And it's almost like it's not my fault. It's the 30-day thing, you know? It's like a great excuse. He says, no, you don't say it's not my fault. You've got alcoholism, but I got alcoholism and the 30-day thing. So it's not like, you know, he says, I drink at 30 days. I'm not in control over it, you know? And so, you know, so we would be going up to pick him up at Bark, you know? So every 30 days, we're taking this drive up. He'd always wind up at Bark. We're taking this drive up to Bark to pick him up. And, you know, I'm sort of watching what's going on. I'm watching, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I'm like stark raving sober. I'm watching, you know, listen, for me to get a resentment, all I got to do is go to a meeting. You know, everything. I'm sitting there just, I'm not drinking. I'm feeling great. I'm feeling ready to resent anything that moves because they're all a bunch of selfish, self-centered jerks. You know what I mean? And, you know, and here's my poor sponsor. He had like 15, 16 years. And he was being, it was clear, it was absolutely clear that this guy was a phony. He was taking advantage of my sponsor. My sponsor would go up there all the time and pick him up. My sponsor, after he would pick him up, he would bring him back down. He would clean him up, give him a few bucks, give him a job, and start taking him to meetings. He promised that he'd never going to do it again. He was going to do well. And then what would happen is 30 days, like clockwork, the guy would go out and drink again. And I'm like watching this, and I remember I'm an attorney, I'm like taking notes, I'm taking photographs, I got evidence, you know, I got fingerprints, you know. I got the whole thing mapped out. I can see that this guy is so full of crap, you know, it's such bullshit, and he's taking advantage of my sponsor. So we're driving up there, this is around the 10th time this has happened, or whatever it is, we're driving up there, So, you know, I just couldn't contain myself. You know, I said, you know, I don't know what we're doing. You know, this guy is, I said, Bob, this guy is so full of crap. You know what I mean? We did this last month. We did this the month before. We did this the month before that, the month before that. Don't you remember up there, Bart? He said the same thing. He doesn't give a crap about you. He doesn't give a crap about me. He's a phony. He doesn't give a crap about anybody. What we ought to do. He's just using you. You know, we ought to turn this thing around and forget him and the hell with him. You know, when he gets ready and blah, 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 blah. You know, and I'm like my own lynch mob, you know, because I'm an alcoholic. I'm like, yeah, let's kill him, you know, let's shoot him, you know, whatever. He drank, you know, kill him, you know, and kill him, shoot him, and everything. And you know, I was right. I was like 1,000,000% right. I mean, I got closing argument. I mean, what is my sponsor? What does he know? I mean, I'm an attorney. You know, I'm graduate of all sorts of with departmental honors in mathematics, National Science Foundation fellow. I mean, the guy like barely graduated high school. You know what I mean? And I got the whole thing down. I've got it in 3x5 cards. I got the photographs and everything. I mean, what's he going to say? So I'm yelling. I'm scared. We got to turn this thing around. And he's right. And I'm getting all emotional and everything like that. And I probably repeated myself 10 times, which is what we do, you know. And then I stopped. I finally got it all out, and I stopped talking. But you know, you know, once you get that locomotive going, you know, if you're an alky, now I'm arguing to the imaginary jury in my mind, you know. I mean, kill him, you know. And I'm doing that, you know. And my sponsor looks at me, and he says, are you done? So I said, yeah. He says, no, Russ, are you done? I said, yeah. I said, are you done? I said, yeah, I'm done. And you know, what's he going to say? I was so right. I was alky right. You know, alky right is if they disagree with you, they must die because they're so stupid. You know what I mean? And, you know, I was like alky right. And just because they're stupid, you know, And so what's he going to say? So he says, are you done? He says, yeah. And he said, Russell. I said, what? He says, Russell. I said, what? 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 He says, this is what he says to me. He says, it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. I said, how could it not bother you? Everything bothers me. You know what I mean? And you know what the problem was? I wanted everything he had. He didn't want anything I had. He had what I had. You know? That's the kind of thing that says, I need a drink. That causes it to say, I need a drink. I had something called alcoholism. I was as physically sober as I've ever been, and I still had alcoholism. I still had that thing where I was okay as long as life was perfect, and nobody did anything wrong, whether it had to do with me or not, and even if it was perfect, anything wrong with them would just be boring, I'd need a drink anyway. You know what I mean? And he had that thing that the Apostle Paul calls a secret, where I've learned to be content in all things. I've been rich, I've been poor, I've been in jail, I've been out of jail, it doesn't matter to me, because my happiness and how I feel about myself doesn't depend upon my circumstances. Which, if you've ever been to discussion meetings, all alcoholics want to talk about is their circumstances. All they want to talk about is their feelings and their circumstances, which is what they really worship. And the only guys that aren't talking about feelings and circumstances are the guys that have been around for 30 years. And they're just there to see where they can help anybody. You know, because they feel okay no matter what their circumstances. It doesn't matter if they have cancer or anything, because their circumstances are not that important. How do you get that deal? How do you do that deal? That's the alcoholism. You know, so that's the deal. The deal is that feeling of how do you, they talk about it in the book, how do you get that fear, that self-centeredness, that selfishness, all the stuff that goes with that is permeating through our mind that we just can't get rid of, because the thoughts themselves are not even volitional thoughts. 80% of the time when you finally get to the point where you actually even realize that your thoughts are killing you, then you say things like this, I gotta stop thinking about this. And you say, yeah, these things, I'm thinking about this, it's killing me. It's not getting any better, it's getting worse. I've got to stop thinking about this. And you stop for, what, 30 seconds? Maybe you go to a meeting. And for an hour, you listen to Russell, you listen to somebody, and all of a sudden, maybe you're thinking about it at the start of the meeting. There were probably guys coming to this meeting right now. They probably didn't hear half of what I said because of the first 20 minutes. They were thinking about that gal, that guy, the money, whatever it is. And somewhere during the meeting, they sort of woke up and they started listening. And all of a sudden, for the last 20 minutes, they haven't been thinking that crap. And they're feeling better, and the meeting's working. And then they're going to walk out of here, and you know what they're going to do? They're going to get in their car, and they're going to pick it up right where they left off. And you know what that is? That's alcoholism. Now, how do you get rid of that deal? You know what Bill Wilson said? It's all about emotional sobriety. That's the next frontier. So the thing is, he said we have unhealthy dependencies. And we don't even know what the dependencies are half the time. You know, that kind of stuff. What happens first, you even have to learn most of the stuff that we have unhealthy dependencies about are things that we're addicted to. If you think giving up the alcohol stuff, where do you start having to talk about a guy about the sex? Where do you start talking to a man about women? You know what I mean? Where do you start talking to men who are always getting drunk and always getting drunk whenever they get into a relationship, and they're getting into relationships all the time? Because the most important thing in their life is they got to have a girl. Or you have a girl, the most important thing in her life is she's got to have a guy. Now listen, I'm a guy. I love guys. I sponsor guys. I think guys are great. They think the way I do. I feel sorry for women that need guys. I'm sorry, gals. I mean, I love you. You know what I mean? But I'll tell you, set your sights on something else to be your rock instead of the guy. Because I know guys, and they're crazy. You know what I mean? And they don't think like you do, you know? And believe me, it ain't going to be like, it ain't going to be like, my wife's at home watching the novellas right now, you know? She's watching what's that channel you guys watch? What's that channel? What is it? Lifetime! The Lifetime channel. Man, if I only, if being able to drink alcohol, you know, without any problem, is the lifetime dream of every alcoholic. It's got to be the lifetime dream of every woman to find a man that will always be with her and never cheat on her and always love her romantically with a house and a white picket fence. That's got to be pretty much the dream. The guy ain't out there. You know what I mean? He ain't there. He ain't coming. He ain't showing up. Okay? So that's the deal on that one. Okay. So hate me. Don't hate me just because I tell the truth. It just ain't gonna. You gotta put. So what does the book say? See to it your relationship with him is right. And great. This is the Central Fat Group, right?
Yes.
So I feel kind of safe in saying this. Well, I say it to groups. You know what the book says? It says see to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. That's what the book says. You know, the book says is if you make it says the first. It says the first thing is you gotta quit playing God. He's the father. You're the child. He's the principal. You're the agent. He says. When you sincerely make the decision for him to turn your life over to him, your will in your life. You know what your will in your life is? Your will is everything you want to do. Everything you want to do goes over to him. You know, I say to my sponsee, I say, so why are you doing this? Well, because I want to do it. I said, well, what does that have to do with it? I thought, is that what God wants you to do? He says, well, but I want to. I said, yeah, but you turned that deal over. It has nothing to do with your will. You've turned that deal over. You've surrendered that deal. No alcoholic wants to hear that deal. You don't want to do that unless you don't want to. You're not going to do that stuff unless you really want to stop drinking. And then just in case there's anything left over, then you give him your life too. That's covered by your life. That's everything else. He's got everything over your life. So it says that when you sincerely make those decisions, all sorts of remarkable things happen. This is, in my opinion, by the way, guys. This is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is our basic text that we all agree on. I mean, I understand if you listen to the, quote, wisdom of the rooms, it's sort of been watered down a little bit since when they first wrote it. But it says when you sincerely make this decision, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all powerful, this is what it says, it's not even a higher power. That's the wrong terminology. Higher power, it says being all powerful, he's the highest power. You know, I mean, I don't know about you, but my problems are big. I need the main guy. I don't want no deputy chief power, you know, assistant to the power, you know. You know, ambassador to the power. I want the main guy. It's saying being all powerful, he gives us everything we need if we stay close to him and do his work well. So I don't know what fellowship you're in, but I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is about knowing who he is, knowing what his work is for me, has worked for me, and doing his work well. That's what my focus has got to be on. You know, if you're an alcoholic, hey, listen, I know you're in an AA meeting, but hey, just because you're in a garage doesn't mean you're a Buick. You know, I mean, just that you may be here, but I'll tell you, I know what the book says. It says if we stay close to him and do his work well, he gives us everything we need. It says we lose fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We start losing thinking about ourselves, our little plans and designs. You know, it says what happens when you start thinking about God and focus on God? You lose concern over your little plans and designs. That would really screw up the discussion meetings, wouldn't it? That would screw up the discussion meetings. They'd have to have different. You can imagine if everybody started focusing on God and thinking about God and making God the central fact of his life, discussion meetings would get kind of boring, wouldn't they? Because people wouldn't be thinking about their little plans and designs. They'd be talking about how they can help other people and how grateful they are to God and how grateful they are for their life and how grateful they are for what they have right now. They'd be talking about all that crap. Oh, man, what a downer. You know what I mean? Everybody, every once in a while, you have a guy like that that shows up, but who wants to listen to him? He's some sort of God guy, and, you know, we're basically cynics and skeptics, and, you know, we want to think about horrible things and talk about them as if talking about them will make them. We're just convinced if we talk more and more about them, it's going to make them better. Just talk and focus on crappy things. Maybe you could find, like the guys I'd hang out with the bars, I'd talk about something crappy, and then they talk about something crappy. I'd call my wife a bitch, and they'd say, yeah, my wife's a bitch, too, you know what I mean? That kind of stuff. God forbid we should be hanging around with people that lift us out of our crappiness. You know what I mean? It says being all powerful. It says, and then it says we lose fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter we were reborn. And then it says think well before taking the step, after you say the third step prayer, that you are finally ready to turn your life utterly, utterly over to Him. That's not my words. Utterly over to Him. Utterly is a big word. It's like thoroughly. Rarely have a seen person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. By the way, you know the path was reading the Bible. Did you know that? In the book Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, it says, point blank, it says the old timers felt that the books that were absolutely essential to read were 1 Corinthians 13, the book of James, and Sermon on the Mount. Our whole thing hangs on those things. That's what they read for the first 4 years. You know, AA started in 1935. And you know the big book was written in 1939, so you know between 1930, you know that book that says rarely haven't seen the payout, rarely haven't seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path? Does anybody know what their path is? Have you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers? Did you read what they were doing for the first 4 years in this thing? Did you read you don't want to read what they're doing, it's just going to upset you. It's just going to get you mad. Around 15 or 20 years, when you feel a little bit more comfortable in yourself and you start realizing that they can't kick you out of Alcoholics Anonymous, they can't ask you to leave, and about 15 or 20 years, when you start worrying about whether other people are laughing at you or what the guys are talking about in the parking lot that are smoking that are going to end up drinking and not going to get this thing anyway, when you start deciding that you're going to follow the minors and you're going to follow the people that you want to be and you want what they have and you're going to be a grown-up, because 1 Corinthians 13, you know, one of the lines they have there, when I was a child, I spoke like a child. When I became a man, I put childish things away. When you decide you're going to grow up and not be a thumbs-up and crybaby and really do this thing and want to get out of this thing because this ain't a dress rehearsal, you're going to start getting into that other stuff that they were doing. And you're going to understand that there's a whole bunch of stuff going on here that that is untapped because you have not been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You've just been a member of the not-drinking club. And the only thing this place is just another bar that they serve coffee at. We used to go to the bars at 5:30 and sit and talk to the guys about all sorts of crap and drink beer. Now you come in here and drink the coffee. Oh, I got obnoxious again. Honestly, I wouldn't do that. But listen, if it upsets you, here's the good news about Alcoholics Anonymous. If I said anything to upset, God forbid if I should say anything to upset anybody, I pray. You know, if you're not upsetting at least 25% of the people you're talking to, you're not saying nothing. You're not saying anything. You know, so, you know, that's the deal. But, you know, here's the good thing about if I upset you. If I upset you, you know what the spiritual axiom is? Whenever you be upset, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. So you owe me like a copayment. I'm just giving you like a spiritual MRI. Because now you go out here, if you're an Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is what you do. You say, I hate that Russell. You know, he says a loud mouth. You know, he thinks he knows everything. Who does he? He doesn't know me. He doesn't know anything. He's a bunch of bullshit. Why do I have to listen to this crap? I don't believe, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then somewhere along the line, you're either going to drink because resentment is not, or you're going to say to yourself this, why does this bother me so much? Like my sponsor said, you know what I mean? He said it doesn't bother me. Why does this bother me? You're going to do a list. You're going to write it down. You're going to talk to your sponsor. You're going to pray about it. And you're going to find something else about yourself as to why I said what I said, which I'm just quoting the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, by the way, or what I said that bothers you. And as soon as you find out what I said that bothers you and why you get so mad about it, you're going to see something about yourself that is crooked, that needs to be straightened out. You understand? Something that's been hurting you. I used to tell my sponsor, well, that's just my personality. He'd say, you know, Russell, it's your personality that's killing you. And that's what's hurting you, because the way you act towards people and the attitude you have. And you're going to see something in yourself, you know, that's why it's bothering you. and you're going to fix that. You're going to pray about it. You're going to see it. It's going to be clear as a bell, and it's not. And that's not going to happen. And you know what's going to happen? You're going to hear me say the same thing at the next meeting, and all of a sudden it's not going to bother you because you're going to see some truth in it. And then you know what's going to happen? It's going to be amazing. Whatever that is in me that I said that bother you, what you're ultimately going to realize is that I'm just a representation of about 10,000 other people that have been bothering you for the same reason for the last 10, 15, 20 years. And all of a sudden, those people aren't going to bother you. And all of a sudden, there's going to be a whole lot of people. Just because you handled that one thing that I bothered you, and you realize what it is, it doesn't bother you, all of a sudden, there's going to be a whole section of your thought life where you're going to be walking the planet, and whatever used to bother you, that stuff isn't going to bother you anymore. And when you do that for about 20 or 30 years, you're pretty much walking around unbotherable. And when you walk around unbotherable, you know, you can get up and talk to people, you can talk fast, you can say shit, you know, you can live your life, you can have grandkids, you can have a wonderful life. Does any of that make any sense?
Yes.
I don't know. Whatever. Maybe not. It made sense to me. So God bless you. Thank you very much.